I want you to imagine a scene for a second. Imagine you're walking into this, pristine, brightly lit art studio.
Okay, setting the scene.
Yeah. And you're expecting to see someone carefully mixing oils on a palette, right? Maybe squinting at a subject, delicately applying these little brush strokes.
Classic painter image, yeah.
Exactly. But instead, you watch someone literally dumping cups of water and liquid acrylic paint directly onto a blank white canvas.
Just completely upending the cups.
Right, just pouring it all out. And I mean, the instinctive first reaction for you, me, or really anyone watching this would probably be to think, well, what a chaotic mess.
Oh, absolutely.
You'd think that is not art, that is just liquid anarchy. It's a meaningless stain on a canvas.
Right. And I mean, it is the most common reaction when people are confronted with these fluid painting techniques. We are deeply conditioned to look for the brushstroke.
Yeah, we want to see the effort.
Exactly. To
Yeah.
look for the deliberate hand of the creator in a very traditional sense.
But here is where we need to completely reframe things today. What if this apparent liquid anarchy, this splashing of paint, is actually being controlled with like the precision of a microscopic surgery?
It's a striking contrast, I know, but that really is the right way to look at it.
So welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission today is to place ourselves right at the exact intersection where physical chaos, strict control, and pure color collide.
It's going to be a fun one.
We are looking at a really fascinating abstract painting titled 10 RAs by the artist Jairo Duke.
And we have some incredibly rich source material for this deep dive, too. We aren't just looking at the finished painting and, guessing at the process.
Right, which happens a lot with abstract art.
It does. But here we have the artwork's exact technical specs alongside Duke's own analytical texts from his overarching project, which he calls Tracedio Pintura Artistica.
Which gives us so much to work with. So we are going to deconstruct this artwork, starting from the raw physics of fluid mechanics all the way up to its deep abstract meaning and honestly, how it can help you reduce stress in your daily life.
Which is a huge jump, but we will get there.
We will. But before we get into the overarching philosophy of it all, we need to understand the physical reality of what we are actually looking at, right? We need to step inside the laboratory.
Yes. Let's look at the physical specs of 10 auras because they outline a very intimate format. This is a canvas that is exactly 10 by 14 inches.
10 by 14, that's pretty small.
Right, which tells us we aren't talking about a massive wall-sized mural that overtakes a whole room. It is a highly contained, highly restricted space.
And the medium is acrylic poured using Liquitex paint.
Standard stuff, yeah.
But there are two details in the technical specs that really stand out to me. First, the location. It specifically notes Whittier, California, United States, March 2021.
Right.
And the second is a note that just says, no reference image, author's design.
Let's actually pause on that location note just to make sure we don't lead anyone astray. When the spec says Whittier, California, it does not mean this is an abstract landscape of that city.
So it's not a sun-drenched abstract of a palm tree or a highway.
Not at all. If you look at the painting, you aren't seeing the melted streets of Southern California. That mention in the specs is strictly about the physical studio space.
Oh, I see.
It's identifying the literal laboratory where the exact temperature, the specific humidity, and the atmospheric conditions allowed this very precise chemical experiment to happen.
Wow. Okay, so it's a geographical stamp of where the fluid dynamics took place.
Yeah.
The environment is actually part of the equation.
Exactly. It's scientific data, really.
That's wild. But I do want to push back on that second note, the one that says no reference image.
I figured you might.
Well, yeah, because if the artist is using this fluid acrylic pouring technique and there is no sketch, no reference, no pencil outline on the canvas, how is this not just a guy letting gravity do all the work?
It's a valid point.
To me, it feels a bit like jazz improvisation. To an outsider, jazz can sound like uncontrollable noise, just everyone playing over each
Like a
other.
total mess.
But a musician will tell you they are making lightning-fast decisions. But if there's no sketch here with this paint, where's the merit?
It's a completely reasonable question to ask if you aren't familiar with the underlying science.
Yeah.
And Duke actually tackles this assumption head on in his texts.
Let's see.
Yeah, he clarifies that this pouring process has nothing to do with impulsive gestures or blind accidents. He calls the process a succession of minimal decisions.
A succession of minimal decisions. I like that.
It's a great phrase. And this is where we have to introduce the physics because it is quite literally a science.
Yeah.
When you look at the canvas and you see these incredibly complex, intricate shapes, They look like microscopic cellular forms.
Yeah, like tiny biological cells with dark membranes around them. They look so perfect, you'd think they were painted with like a one-hair brush.
Right, or like a cross-section of plant tissue under a microscope. Well, they aren't painted. They are provoked.
Provoked. What do you mean?
They're provoked through a phenomenon in fluid mechanics called the Rayleigh-Taylor instability.
Okay, Rayleigh-Taylor instability? That sounds like an advanced engineering lecture.
I know. But the concept is actually beautifully simple once you see it in action. The Rayleigh-Taylor instability occurs when you have two fluids of different densities, and the heavier fluid is pushing into the lighter fluid.
Okay, I'm tracking.
So Duke is utilizing the specific density of his pigments and the viscosity of the liquid.
Let's break that down a bit, because he's using Liquitex, which is just a commercially available brand of acrylic paint, right? Yeah. You can buy it at any art store. It's not some rare laboratory chemical.
Right. It is a standard acrylic polymer emulsion, but the actual pigments suspended inside that emulsion have different physical weights.
Wait, really? The colors actually weigh different amounts.
Yes. A heavier pigment, say, a dense abyssal black made from carbon or iron oxides, has a literal physical weight to it. When it's poured and mixed with water, it actively pushes down into the fluid matrix.
Oh, wow.
Meanwhile, a lighter pigment, like a bright, vibrant yellow, might be based on lighter synthetic compounds. So it is physically lighter, and it fights to emerge to the surface.
So the paint is literally wrestling itself inside the puddle. The heavy black sinks. The light yellow forces its way up, and as it breaks the surface, it creates those perfect, round cellular forms.
You've got it exactly. The artist isn't randomly splashing. They are calculating these mineral weights.
That is fascinating.
They are deciding the exact millisecond to stop pouring or tipping the canvas just a fraction of a degree to force a chemical cell to stretch in one specific direction.
Okay, so if he's literally relying on gravity to pull these heavy and light pigments apart, why restrict it to a tiny 10 by 14 inch canvas?
Oh, the size.
Yeah, because if the canvas were infinitely large, the paint would just spread out forever, right?
Okay.
It would just dry as a massive, flat, boring puddle.
Exactly. By trapping this chemical reaction inside a stripped 10 by 14 inch border, you are creating physical resistance.
So the borders push back.
Yes. The fluids are forced to crash into the edges and bounce back into each other. The artist isn't forcing a shape with a brush. They are providing the boundaries so the physics can essentially paint the artwork itself.
The frame generates the resistance. Duke is just guiding the physics.
Perfectly said.
Okay, so we have an artist wrestling with fluid dynamics in this really tight space. But if gravity is pulling these heavy and light pigments into each other, how on earth is he using 5 or 6 intense colors at once without just making mud?
That's the big question.
Because looking at Tanauri's, I mean, this is not a shy painting.
No, the texts actually describe the palette as exuberant and deliberately excessive. We were talking about intense pinks, incredibly vibrant yellows, greens, deep blues, all fighting against this abyssal black.
Right. And anyone who has ever been a kid with a watercolor set knows the universal rule of color mixing. If you put pink, yellow, green, blue, and black into a cup of water,
you do not get a masterpiece.
No. You get a hideous, muddy, brown disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So if Duke is pouring all these liquid acrylics onto a single small canvas, why doesn't it just turn into a swamp?
That is the real genius of the technique. Duke describes this as seeking resonance rather than traditional harmony.
Resonance, okay.
To understand why they don't turn to mud, don't think about paint. Think about geology.
Geology?
Think about tectonic plates.
Mm-hmm.
Because Duke perfectly balances the exact weights of those Liquitex pigments with the precise amount of water, these colors do not dissolve into one another to create a soft mass.
Mm-hmm.
They act exactly like tectonic plates. They collide, they push, they slide under one another.
Oh, so when that bright yellow meets the deep blue, they don't just politely mix into a soft green.
No, they violently push against each other.
Wow.
Some colors act expansively, aggressively claiming territory across the canvas. Other colors are forced to yield and retreat. And just like real tectonic plates, where they meet, they create a massive zone of friction.
That makes so much sense.
If you zoom in on the borders between the colors in this painting, you see this incredible topography. You see what looks like galactic foam, these tiny, intricate craters along the edges.
Wait a minute. Wait.
Hmm.
If the original paint was mixed with water to allow these tectonic plates of color to flow and crash into each other.
Yeah.
But what we are looking at now is a completely dry canvas hanging on a wall.
Mm.
We aren't actually looking at flowing paint. We are looking at a fossil.
A fossil. I like where you're going with this.
The water did all the work of moving the color.
Right.
And then it evaporated in that Whittier studio back in 2021. So the continuous flow we feel when we look at the painting is actually the corpse of the kinetic energy.
Mm.
It's the fossil record left behind by water that's long gone.
That is a brilliant way to put it. It is the footprint of an energy that has vanished.
Wow.
And realizing that the painting is a fossilized map of energy bridges us directly to the overarching philosophy of Duke's entire project, which he calls Trastio.
Trastio. Now, Trastio is a very specific Spanish concept, isn't it?
It is. Usually it translates to a sort of informal tinkering, playing around without strict rules. Like if you're fixing a bike but you don't really know what you're doing, or you're strumming a guitar just to see what sounds come out, you are trastiando.
Right. It implies a casual lack of finality.
Exactly.
But Duke elevates this word to do some very heavy lifting in his art. He uses the concept of trastio to strip the canvas of its historical baggage.
How so?
Well, for centuries, the canvas has been treated as a final destination. You know, it's a sacred monument where an image goes to be permanently frozen in time.
It's where an image goes to die, in a sense.
Exactly. By applying the mindset of trastio, of tinkering, of moving things around without a fixed endpoint, Duke turns the canvas into what he calls a transit territory.
So the painting is a verb, not a noun.
It is an event that happened, not an object that was manufactured. Which brings us to the title, Ten Ores.
Right, Ten Ores. I have to admit, I've looked at the painting, and I cannot find an ores hidden in there anywhere. Well, that's because the title does not describe a literal object. You can't scan the canvas to find the ores, like a Where's Waldo?
So what is it then?
The title is suggestive. It points to a perceptual dimension. Duke's work is attempting to map invisible fields.
Invisible fields.
Think about the forces that dictate our entire physical reality. Things like gravity, surface tension, chemical interactions.
Right.
These forces are everywhere, constantly acting upon us, but they are entirely invisible to the human eye.
I mean, yeah, you can't paint a realistic portrait of gravity.
Exactly. You can only evidence gravity through what it does to something else. By pouring this liquid acrylic, by letting the heavy iron oxide sink and the lighter synthetics rise, Duke is creating a physical record of gravity and surface tension at work.
Oh, wow. I see it now. You see gravity in the way a cellular membrane stretches across the canvas. You see surface tension in the tiny craters where two colors collided.
Yes. The painting makes the invisible forces visible. It's a snapshot of physics in action.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. And understanding that we are looking at a map of invisible forces and this fossilized energy completely changes how we should look at this kind of art.
It really does.
And we need to address the anxiety that people often feel when they stand in front of an abstract painting.
Yeah.
Because there is a real pressure there.
You know? Totally. People feel intimidated.
Yeah. You stand there and think, what does the pink mean? What is the hidden moral message? If I don't get it, am I just not smart enough?
It's an intense frustration. We are taught to read art like a textbook, you know, constantly looking for the thesis statement.
But Duke is brutally honest in his text about this. He flat out says there is no moral message here. There is no hidden narrative. Pink does not symbolize love in this painting, and black does not symbolize death.
Which should be incredibly liberating for the viewer.
It relieves all the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine you are lying on your back in the grass on a really windy day, watching the clouds tear across the sky.
Yeah.
Or you're sitting on a cliff watching the ocean crash violently against the rocks.
Yeah.
You don't sit there getting frustrated trying to decode the hidden message in the ocean waves. You don't ask yourself what the water is trying to tell you about society, you just watch it.
You just let it wash over you.
Exactly. You experience the rhythm, the movement, the crash, the foam. You just take it in.
That ocean analogy captures exactly what Duke asks of his audience. He talks about the process of painting this not as an act of commanding the paint, but as an act of listening.
An act of listening. I love that.
He had to listen to what the water needed, how the pigment weights were interacting, how the borders of that 10 by 14 canvas were pushing back. And he asked the viewer to perform a visual act of listening as well.
So when you look at 10 R's, don't demand an explanation from it.
Exactly. Let your eyes travel over those microscopic mountain ranges of color. Let your gaze rest in the calmer, smoother areas of the canvas.
Just be present with the visual data.
It requires a willingness to accept ambiguity.
And accepting ambiguity is really where this deep dive stops being just about an art critique and becomes highly applicable to everyday life.
This is my favorite part of his philosophy.
Because this concept of navigating chaos shouldn't just be confined to an art gallery in Whittier. It has revolutionary implications for how you, the listener, navigate your own life.
If we look at society today, we are suffering from what you could call control sickness.
The control sickness, yeah, that's accurate.
We are obsessed with absolute certainty. We want our lives to operate like perfect, error-free spreadsheets. We expect immediate results.
We want to micromanage everything.
Exactly. We happily let algorithms dictate our choices because it removes the friction of uncertainty, you know? We want everything in our lives to be labeled, categorized, and totally dominated by our own will. We just flee from ambiguity.
Because ambiguity feels like chaos, and chaos is terrifying.
It is.
But Duke's philosophy of Trastio offers a completely different framework for problem solving. Applying this mindset means actively learning to let go of forcing preconceived outcomes.
What actually happens when we stop trying to micromanage the unmanageable?
Well, let's ground this in your daily routine, you know, for the listener. Think about all the unpredictable variables you deal with every single day. A major project at work completely falls apart at the last minute. Your flight gets delayed.
Yeah.
You have unexpected friction with a coworker or a family member.
It happens to all of us.
Right. And our instinct is to violently dominate that chaos, to force it back into our little spreadsheet of how the day was supposed to go.
Which usually just creates muddy water.
Yes. It creates exhaustion. Think about those unexpected disruptions, like the heavy black pigment dropping onto the canvas of your day. You can't just delete it. You can't force the heavy black pigment to float.
You have to work with it.
If you practice what Duke did in his studio, you treat that chaos with a succession of minimal decisions. You perform an act of listening to the situation rather than screaming at it.
Which is so much healthier.
You realize that some forces, some people, are heavy pigments that are going to sink. And some are light pigments that'll rise.
And by doing that, you aren't giving up, you know? You are building massive mental flexibility. You are allowing the tectonic plates of your life to slide and create new topography rather than just breaking under the pressure of trying to control them.
And it all stems from a 10 by 14 inch canvas.
It's pretty amazing.
So to summarize our journey today, we started by looking at the raw physical fluid dynamics of commercially available acrylics in a small studio in California. We saw how calculating the exact chemical weight of pigments creates cellular structures through the Rayleigh-Taylor instability.
We explored how those colors clash and fight for space like tectonic plates, leaving behind a fossilized record of kinetic energy long after the water has evaporated.
We unpacked the philosophy of Trastio, realizing that the canvas is just a transit territory used to map the invisible forces of the universe, like gravity and surface tension.
And finally, we saw how abandoning the need for a hidden narrative in abstract art can actually teach us how to embrace the ambiguities and sudden disruptions in our own lives.
Because letting go of absolute control doesn't mean yielding to disaster. It means allowing a different kind of order to reveal itself.
That beautifully put.
We want to leave you with a final thought to mull over as you go about the rest of your week. The next time a sudden, uncontrollable variable drops right into the middle of the perfectly planned canvas of your day.
Which it will.
Oh, it definitely will. Instead of fighting aggressively to wipe it away and restore your original plan, how can you act like the borders of that 10 by 14 canvas?
Right.
How can you provide just enough gentle resistance, just enough of a boundary, to let a completely unexpected, entirely beautiful pattern emerge all on its own?
It's all about that visual act of listening.
It really is. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep that open disposition as you head back out into the world, and we'll catch you on the next one.